This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sportsnap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And a good Monday to you. Glad you could be with us. Sportsmap Radio, it is Wake Up Call. Tony D, Ron Culver, we're going through week 9 of the NFL. You know, we're at that point in the season where, okay, now teams start to show me something. Now, we all know if you've been a longtime NFL fan, what you're going to take out of week 10, 11, 12, the next couple of games that we're going to have, is not indicative of what's going to happen in the postseason. When they'll get to the postseason, all bets are off. You could play badly, you could play great, you could surprise some teams, you could be very, very disappointing and losing at home. But this is where we start seeing some shape, right? We do want to know, are you legitimate? How are you playing? What do you look like? And that was on the table for the Buffalo Bills, one of the premier early afternoon games yesterday. Because the Bills, at 6-2 going into the matchup with Seattle, hadn't really beaten anybody. They had finally gotten over the hump by beating the Patriots, a team that had beaten them 7 times. That Patriots team is not the same. We know that. But the Bills, you know, maybe a win against the LA Rams at home, that was about it. Other than that, they struggle against teams that are really good. And here came the Seahawks, and Russell Wilson, who's having this MVP-like season, are really good. They were 6-1. And Buffalo put up 44 on them. 44. And Josh Allen outdueled Russell Wilson in the game. Wilson had 4 turnovers, 2 interceptions, and he fumbled twice. And Allen had 3 touchdown passes and a touchdown run, and the Bills go to 7-2. Well, this is a 7-2 start for Buffalo for the first time since 1993, when they were the Bills going to Super Bowls and disappointing America by not winning those Super Bowls, but still going to Super Bowls. Does that mean that the Bills are one of the elite teams in the AFC? Yeah, it could, because when you look at where the landscape is, you know, who's better right now? Maybe a little bit of Baltimore, maybe Pittsburgh, maybe Kansas City. But when Buffalo plays well defensively and they can befuddle you a bit, they're a team that's hard to figure out. They're a team that when they play well, they're hard to stop. They're hard to beat. But as we move on, watch for this team, because they've still got a couple of games on their schedule that will still need to feel about whether or not they get to be in the same kind of conversation as terms of Super Bowl contender. It's a step for Buffalo. I don't know if it's a big leap for Buffalo by beating Seattle at home. We'll get more of Week 9 action as we continue. Good Monday morning to you. Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsmap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, your thoughts on Week 9. Some of the games on Sunday. You can hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with 2 N's. Today, every home in America needs a reliable thermometer for twice-a-day readings for your temperature. Protect your family with the Exergen Temporal Scanner. It's the only home thermometer used and recommended by hospitals, physicians, and clinics. I thought yesterday had a lot of cool storylines. Really a lot of cool storylines. Now, some games were duds. I thought the Ravens-Colts game had potential, but that didn't really work out. Phillip Rivers wasn't all that awesome, and the Ravens ended up getting a road win. And some of the games were obviously forgettable given the team's record. The Giants beating Washington, Texans over the Jaguars. But there were some other games that really carried some significance. And it doesn't mean that they were close or they were good. It's just that they carried some significance. And I brought up the Bills and Seahawks at the top of the hour because Buffalo is one of those teams. And we know we get these every year, right? There's these contenders and then there's the pretenders. And Buffalo was always in the pretender category, right? Because they would be pretty good. They'd have a good record. Even when the Patriots were, you know, dominating the division, Buffalo would sneak into the postseason, but they would lose, right? They a couple of years ago, they lost on the road to Jacksonville. They lost last year to Houston, right? I mean, they would just find a way. They would stumble and they'd be done. That's it. And then this year, there was this opportunity to win the division because we didn't really know what the Patriots were going to look like without Brady. And here comes Cam Newton, and he got COVID, and he hasn't really been the same quarterback since. And they've lost four in a row. And there's this opening, and the Bills are taking it. But are they Kansas City good? Nope. Are they Pittsburgh good? I don't know. Are they Baltimore good? I'm not sure either. Maybe Tennessee. Well, they lost to Tennessee. They lost to Kansas City. They lost to two teams that were on top of their divisions and teams that are going to be contenders for the AFC crown. But this win against Seattle might begin to put them in the conversation. And again, you don't have to be on top of that list. You just have to be on the list. Right? Maybe Kansas City is still the best team in the AFC. Maybe Pittsburgh is still one of the top Super Bowl contenders in the NFL. But Buffalo, I think with this win, could remove a lot of doubt of people who are saying, look, it's one thing when you beat up teams you should beat. When you play good teams, why do you lose? Why do you lose? Right? And why not only do you lose, why do you lose when you look like you're being outplayed to a point where you're not quite ready yet? And this was one of those games. Had the score been reversed, it was 44-34. Maybe it's just a 10-point loss to Russell Wilson, right? But people would still have that problem with Buffalo. They'd still say, but you know what? Even if Allen played a decent game and came up 10 points short, this is what's plaguing the Bills. They can't seem to get over the hump in terms of playing quality teams. So our expectation is, as soon as you get to the playoffs, you're going to run into one of these teams, you're going to lose, and that's going to be it. But the opposite happened. Josh Allen outplayed Russell Wilson. Wilson did not play very well at all. This is a one-dimensional team right now in Seattle. This is all they do. They throw. They can't run yet. And the defense is suspect. And Buffalo took advantage of it. And Buffalo's defense came to play, too. I know they gave up 34, but they got four turnovers in this game. And Allen, with three touchdowns and a touchdown run, had one of those moments because his grandmother had died the day before. Do you need to play? Do you need some time off? He decided to play, and he did really, really well. 415 yards passing with three touchdowns. And Buffalo is now 7-2. When their defense plays really well and plays to a point where they are getting turnovers and making good stops in certain situations, and Allen is throwing the ball and running the ball, and he becomes they are a team that is really a threat. The problem is, again, their two losses against Tennessee and Kansas City, they're troublesome. They're troublesome because, again, these are the two teams. And they'll play Pittsburgh later on this season. We'll see where they are there. But let's look at the teams that are in contention for the Super Bowl from the AFC side. You've got Kansas City. Now, Kansas City was playing Carolina, and Carolina was getting Christian McCaffrey back. And I always say, look, there are teams that are desperate are dangerous, really dangerous. And Carolina was desperate, right? They're not in the playoff running, but they want a good season. First-year head coach Matt Rhule, and McCaffrey's coming back, and they had lost three in a row. And they're desperate, but they're going to play the Super Bowl champs, probably the best team in the NFL, arguably the best team in the NFL. They put on a show. I mean, they did. They gave the Chiefs some fits. But what's the takeaway out of this game? How great Patrick Mahomes is. Because he was not only cerebral in this game in terms of breaking down Carolina defensively, throwing four touchdowns, he really looked good doing it. And the Chiefs not escape necessarily with the 33-31 victory. Because, again, they played really, the Kansas City played really well in this game, and the Panthers got two fourth quarter touchdowns to make it maybe a little bit more interesting. But this is a good back and forth affair. Look at Pittsburgh. This game is indicative of where the Steelers have been this entire season. The Steelers are 8-0, but this is once again Pittsburgh goal line stand, hold on, and get a victory. Now, last week's game against Baltimore, I don't care how bad they played. I don't care. You can nitpick some of the things that went wrong for Pittsburgh against the Ravens, but it's Pittsburgh-Baltimore, and that happens. Both of those teams are going to make mistakes. Both of those teams are going to look good at times, terrible at times, bad decisions, don't execute, etc., because they face each other and they're rivals, and it's that sort of physical football. But this was a Cowboys team that was beat up and really, really desperate for something. And Garrett Gilbert was the starter, who, by the way, finally find out. I totally had forgotten poor Garrett Gilbert. I totally forgotten his time at Texas. And I shouldn't have, because he was the replacement for the quarterback against Alabama.
Colt McCoy.
Colt McCoy.
Yeah.
when Colt McCoy got injured. God, why was I thinking of somebody else? Colt McCoy got injured, Gilbert came in, and they lost. And there were people who said, look, if Colt McCoy had stayed healthy, Texas might have won that game. I don't know about that, but Gilbert came in and replaced McCoy in that national championship game. Went on to play at SMU, bounced around the league a little bit, never really found a home, won a Super Bowl on the practice squad, I guess, with the Patriots. Is that right? Is that where you won a Super Bowl?
I think so.
Yeah, something along those lines. But he looked pretty good for a guy that just got the job 10 minutes before kickoff.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
it was either that or the Steelers were playing down to him.
And that's what my problem is with Pittsburgh, is these kind of games happen all the time. And I was worried about this. Look, I know the Steelers aren't going 16-0. They're not that good. They're not that good to go 16-0. And I know people are looking at their schedule and like, well, they got Cincinnati and they got Jacksonville. They got that tough Ravens game, but it'll be at home. And they've got Washington and they've got the Bengals again. And they got the Colts team that's... They're not going to go 16-0.
But
they might go 14-2.
But that's your fear, right? With the Steelers,
right?
Is it they're going to play to the level? So they may not be, or they may not lose to, say, the Ravens again, but they'll be a good chance they lose to Cincinnati.
And they could have lost yesterday, and probably should have lost yesterday. And that I'm on these like Steeler fan Facebook pages, right? And it blew me away. How many people on those Facebook pages were saying things like, I wonder if Mike Tomlin should rest all the starters for this one. Like, again, this is an NFL football game with professional athletes on the other side of the field. This is an Alabama Chattanooga. The Cowboys may be beat up, but they are professional athletes. They get paid to play football. They are going to come to play if they feel like you're weak. If they feel like there's an opportunity, they're going to take advantage of it. And the Steelers played right down to their level, right down to their level. Couldn't convert on third downs, missing throws, guys dropping passes all over the place like the ball was on fire. And meanwhile, the Cowboys were converting third downs, moving the ball down the field. They make a few mistakes, but they led for most of the game yesterday. They led for most of the game until the Steelers outscored them in the fourth quarter 15-0. And Pittsburgh, once again, did what they normally do in these situations where they're hovering around a team they should be destroying, but they don't, is they make a play, and then they make a defensive stop. But even that was too tricky. Look, if you are down 5 points, if you're up 5 points, and you have the ball in the opponent's territory, and you have a chance to kick the field goal to go up by eight, you take it, right? On any sort of metric, you take it. Because not only does the other team still has to score a touchdown. If you're up five and you go for it on fourth down and you miss, they still have to score a touchdown. But if you go by eight, they got to get a touchdown and the two-point conversion. And how many times have we seen that fail? Where the team gets a big touchdown, but they can't convert the two-point conversion. Happened yesterday in the Jacksonville game, where late in the game, they scored a touchdown but couldn't get the two-point conversion. And then they couldn't get the onside kick. Same thing here. The Steelers had the ball deep in Cowboy territory. It was fourth and short. They don't send the field goal unit in. Why? Why don't they kick the field goal to go up by eight? Because Dallas had been showing that they were in the backfield. They could get to the ball. They could get to the kicker. They were showing tremendous special teams pressure. Special teams has been a problem for Pittsburgh this year, despite their 8-0 start. Right move by Mike Tomlin, because he noticed his team was weak. He noticed his team was weak in that particular area. So, again, a block could be returned for a touchdown, and next thing you know, you're down. You're losing. So you go for it on fourth down. You trust your offense can get the yard and put the game away. They didn't, so you got to get a defensive stop. You do, but then you get the ball back. What do? You give it back up again. And then all of a sudden, the Cowboys have another chance to go down the field. And Garrett Gilbert, let me just say this to Cowboys fans out there. Garrett Gilbert throwing a pass in the end zone that would have automatically won the game is more than you could have asked for at the start of the season against an unbeaten team. If you're old enough to know this rivalry, and I know it's kind of disappeared over the years, but if you're old enough to know the 70s rivalry into Super Bowl 30 and America's team versus Steelers and all that, all of the stuff that has gone between the two, Staubach and Bradshaw and all that, if you're old enough to remember that, if you're a Cowboys fan, to get a win against an unbeaten Pittsburgh team with Garrett Gilbert throwing the ball into the end zone, giving your team a shot, is more than you could have asked for. Without that, I normally would have called my brother just to do some natural fun banter, and we kind of did, but I did tell him that's the scariest I have been this season with Pittsburgh this year. And it's not scary like losing out on a playoff spot. Like, you want the run to continue. But that's as scary as I felt with Pittsburgh's season. They looked terrible and deserved to lose the game. But they pull it off. But you know that when you talk about the AFC and you talk about the Titans who won and beat the Bears and the Bears scored a couple of touchdowns late, you talk about the Kansas City Chiefs rolling the way the Steelers, even though they're 8-0, another tight win, another play down to the level of competition, but still pull out a victory. Is Buffalo in that conversation? Is Buffalo in the mix there? Yeah, Buffalo's in the mix there. You don't know what kind of team they're going to bring to a possible Kansas City rematch or possible Tennessee rematch or what they'll bring when they face the Steelers later on in December. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. A couple of things to get to also with some of the late games. The Steelers-Cowboys was the national late game. That was the Romo-Nance game. But it wasn't the best one in the late afternoon. We'll tell you what was next as Wake Up Call continues.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call on a Monday as we go through Week 9 of the NFL. Hey, your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't compromise your visibility with streaks and smearing on your windows when it's time to replace your wiper blades. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts to see their selection and the professional parts people help you find just the right wiper blade, and they'll install them for free. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Michael on Twitter made a very good point. To go 16-0, you need comfortable wins, not close ones. Look at the only two unbeaten teams during the regular season. The Dolphins had 11 games with two or more score win average by margin of 15 points. The Patriots had 12 with an average margin of victory of 20 points. Yeah, that's true. This is the thing, right? I mean, the Steelers haven't had, maybe the Browns game this season was comfortable. But other than that, maybe the Giants at the beginning of the season, but other than that, they played down to Denver. They had to shut out the Texans to win 28-21. They had to shut them out in the second half to win 28-21. The Eagles were in that game. The Titans were in that game, missed a field goal that would have tied it. The Ravens obviously were in that game, and the Cowboys should have won. Eventually, the Steelers' luck is going to run out. And so I, when people are looking at their schedule saying Bengals twice and Browns again and Washington, and yeah, but you know, there's, and it's eventually going to run out on them. I was so nervous when Ben Roethlisberger left that game, though.
Yeah.
I was so nervous. I'm like, you're not going to lose. I am not going to lose to Dallas and the quarterback at the same game. We're not doing this. All right. No chance. I was like, the football gods can't be that mad at me for something, right? I'm going to lose Roethlisberger and to the Dallas Cowboys in the same in the same night.
I mean, you just get that feeling with Roethlisberger, though, that he's just one hit away from done again.
Nobody likes to see the backup quarterback, right? Nobody likes to see a backup quarterback.
Well,
when I see Mason Rudolph,
except,
I cringe like you wouldn't believe.
But except for one team.
Which is?
Washington.
Oh, except Washington, yeah, because Alex Smith.
It's the only time we want to see the backup quarterback because we're sitting there just in awe.
Yeah, but when Mason Rudolph came into the game, I've already gone through this.
You don't want that.
I've already did this with him already. I don't need to see it again. I know he can't play. Oh, my goodness. So, as I said earlier, the national late afternoon game yesterday was Pittsburgh-Dallas. If you were not in a market that was playing, you got this game. It was the big CBS nationally televised game. It was clearly not even close to the best game. Despite it being close, it was not the best game. It was Tua Kyler Part 2 that was the best game because these two teams met in the Orange Bowl back when they were in college.
Well, the players.
Huh?
The players.
Yeah, that's what I said. I said Tua and Kyler Part 2 because they met in the Orange Bowl.
Well, but you said these two teams met.
No, I said, meant because I said Tua and Kyler because they met
I'm with you.
In the Orange Bowl.
I'm with you.
I don't believe the Miami Dolphins and the Arizona Cardinals, just to clarify it, I don't believe those two teams played a college football game.
No, but the Jets would have.
Okay. So the Dolphins win 34-31, and Tua, two touchdowns, and Kyler Murray had three, including a touchdown run. And this was the more fun football game, despite the fact that the national attention would have been on an unbeaten Steeler team playing a Cowboy team with a quarterback that just got the job yesterday.
See, now, I was watching Red Zone, so I kept getting a lot of this game. I'm just curious if, you know, watching the night, how many times did they cut away to that game?
To the Dolphins game?
To the Dolphins Cardinals
game. A lot.
Okay,
they did. Because it was back and forth. It was so fun to see the highlights of these two really good young players. But because if you remember that Orange Bowl, that was a show. I mean, that was a real show between those two guys. They were throwing the ball all over the place. It was all sorts of yardage built up. The scoring was fantastic. And so, yeah, when you get to the NFL, it's not as easy to do that as it is in college, but they still did fantastic. They still did remarkable. And here's the thing about the Dolphins. I criticized the move before, like when they were going into their bye week and they made the move to Tua. They were sitting at that time, I believe, 3-3. Right? If I'm not mistaken, they were in the running for the playoffs. They were still a team that, with the extra playoff team, was still playing good enough to warrant a playoff berth. And now they went to Tua, and you don't know. And what if he doesn't play well and he's getting experience? Yes. But if it derails you, no, it's not derailed him. Right? Tua didn't have a great game against the Rams, but he had a very good game against Arizona. And now they've won four in a row with two by his hands. So, this is the right move for Brian Flores. He did a fantastic job here of evaluating. And this is what he said when everyone was criticizing him. He said, look, we're seeing things in practice that make us think he can do this. Now, practice in the game is obviously different, but that's what coaches get paid to do. The coaches are supposed to look at what's going on in practice and say, look, this is what we're seeing. These are the things he's doing that we think will translate to a game. That, you know, against a Arizona defense or a Rams defense or Chargers who they're playing next or whoever it is on their schedule, that they can go down and he can execute these throws in these tight situations, et cetera, et cetera. That's what the coaches get paid to do. Now, it doesn't mean we can't criticize coaching decisions. They make mistakes. This one was a little hard to digest because my thought process was you have an obligation to the 53 guys on the roster to get this team, even if you have to kick and scream them into the playoffs, you do it. Even if they're beat up and 8-8, you do it. Because you have an obligation to the players to not look ahead to the future and rebuild and give a guy work, you know, give a guy a starting job that when your regular starter that's winning a few games is not hurt, he's not injured, this is an emergency situation, this is just a change of quarterback. Right, to go with the future of the franchise, even if you don't really know what he'll do. So the evaluation process seemed to be working out because he did look great. He looked like he belonged. Now, again, he's a rookie. We'll see 2 or 3 years down the road. But right now, he looks fantastic. And we now know Kyler Murray can play in this league.
Yeah.
Right?
That's pretty evident now.
And think about this for a second. I mean, think about Arizona because I heard this sort of analysis when they went to Tua at some point in the process of the bye week when they were off. And somebody said, look, if you bring in Tua and you start realizing, and you realize through 4 or 5 games he's struggling, at the time, you know, the Texans won, but you had the Texans first round pick, you would then go, look, can Tua play in this league or not? Yes, he was a first round pick. But that doesn't mean we're married to this guy forever, because if you look, Arizona had a first round pick in Josh Rosen and they were not married to him at all.
Yep.
Right. They brought in a new head coach and the head coach was like, that's not my guy. And so you have to get rid of a guy after 1 year.
And it turns out he was right.
And he turned out he was 100% correct.
What I love most about the Cardinals as well is the fact that, you know, this is where you look at other quarterbacks around the league, say, you know, I'm going to pick on Sam Darnold and the Jets. Where the Jets have not done anything to help Sam Darnold, Cardinals immediately went out there and said, okay, you know what? Kyler needs a playmaker. He has Larry Fitzgerald, but Larry Fitzgerald, you know, let's face it, he's about a year. Maybe he could stretch it into another year from retiring. So what do? They go out and get the best wide receiver in the league.
Yep, they do.
And they give him a weapon that he's just abusing constantly.
And now you've got a division that is going to start. It looks like it's going to start getting a little weaker from its 4 strong with how the 49ers are banged up.
Yeah.
But now that puts Arizona in a conversation of playoffs, right? I mean, right now. And look how big, and it's not, you know, I know we still got a long way to go. We still got, you know, we're still at the halfway point. But look again, Miami is putting pressure on Buffalo. Buffalo isn't running away with a division where the Jets stink and the Patriots have lost 4 in a row and the Dolphins are supposedly rebuilding. Right, the Dolphins have now won 5 of their last 6 games to be 5-3 on the season.
And they look great.
Look really good.
It's impressive.
It's not just Tua. Their defense is good, too.
Yes.
So
they got another score yesterday.
I know. It's great. It's good to see these teams. But I get it. If you're, you know, if you're the national, if you got the Steelers Cowboys, you throw that on. But yesterday, the more fun game was Miami Arizona.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't choose the other late game.
Yeah, I know, because we got to get to that too as we continue. Week 9 of the NFL.
We don't need to talk about the game at all.
Rolling along, it's a wake up call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along with Wake Up Call, going through Week 9 of the NFL. We're going to get to some college, too. Next hour, Matt Michelle is going to join us, Orlando Sentner. I like talking to him. Good stuff. We're going to talk about the Clemson-Notre Dame game and how good is Florida after beating Georgia. We'll get all the college football news coming up in hour two as well. Hey, it's time to talk about Infinite CBD. I've definitely been noticing the life-changing benefits of CBD even better because it's got no THC. It's a great line of products from Infinite CBD, from their Freezing Point cooling creams, which help me with those aching muscles that I've got, and also the tasty yet relaxing vegan gummies. Infinite CBD's line of products have 0% THC, and it's non-intoxicating, which means it's ideal for people seeking the benefits of cannabinoids without the mind-altering effects of medical marijuana. CBD is non-toxic and help you better manage your pain, discomfort, and stress levels. Infinite CBD's hemp is organically grown in Colorado. All of their products are expertly formulated by master chemists who provide all the benefits without the worry. With the products available in CBD isolate or broad-spectrum CBD oil, there is something for everyone. Their products are even backed by a 30-day satisfaction guarantee, so giving it a try is completely risk-free. Text WAKE UP to 511-511. Save 20% off your order. Plus, orders over $20 receive a free 1,000-milligram strawberry banana dropper, a $53 value. Free shipping on for orders over $99. Text WAKE UP to 511-511. Or you can go to their website, InfiniteCBD.com, and use the code WAKE UP to start improving your quality of life today. These products and statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration and are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or illness. Message and data rates may apply. Stop to unsubscribe. All right, as we continue week 9 of the NFL, so the Chargers lose another heartbreaker. Another heartbreaker. Good. Listen, I'm going to ask you to be honest with me. Look, nobody wants to be 2-6, but watching the way Justin Herbert plays and throws the football, are you just taking a year here and just going, look, we're losing these close games. We probably would have got blown out with anybody else, but this kid's keeping us in these games. And he's going to be fantastic.
All right, here's the thing, okay?
All right.
I said that, about 4 or 5 weeks ago?
Right.
That when Justin Herbert started playing, it's like, hey, I don't care if this team goes 1-15. You know, Troy Aikman, I keep using Troy Aikman as my go-to. That Troy Aikman, his first year with the Cowboys, they went 1-15. And then it kind of worked out for them later on during the 90s, right?
I think Peyton Manning and the Colts went 3-13.
Yeah, and it kind of worked out for the Colts as well.
Certainly as well, yes.
So there is that upside with the Chargers and what Justin Herbert is doing. However, we got to win one
you
of these games.
Getting a little old. It is getting a little old. Now, if you missed the game yesterday, or missed some of the highlights, the Chargers
had all you need to know.
Ball down at the goal line. They had two passes into the end zone, two fades that were both
same
dropped.
Place.
Same place.
Same
and
play.
Herbert puts it on a dime. And Mike Williams couldn't come down with it. And then the tight end.
Yeah, the backup tight end. I can't remember
backup
his name.
Tight end. He couldn't come down with it either.
Parnip or Parfin or what, I don't know.
He couldn't score either. He couldn't catch the ball either. Williams went down hard, too. There was a moment where, like, oh, God. He hit his head really hard down on the turf.
Yeah.
But he threw two balls that should have been caught. By professional wide receivers, he should have been caught. Should have been caught. And they would have won the game. But again, it's another close loss for the Chargers. And I get it. It's getting old. You have this opportunity slip away. Last second touchdown by the Broncos. You let that slip away. You lose to the Saints by 3. You lose to the Buccaneers in a close game. It's a Panthers another one.
And that's the thing, right? I mean, they virtually called the same exact play.
Right.
I mean, I think it was a different lineup, but it was the same throw, same everything. You know, almost worked the first time, I guess. Go back to the wheelhouse and what ain't broke, try to, you know, don't fix it type of mentality.
Exactly.
And I think that might be part of the problem, is that you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's the play calling at this point now.
Might be.
Here's the deal. If you didn't watch the game, there were 7 seconds left in the game. They were on the 1 yard line or 2 yard line. I mean, they were right there. And, you know, they were able to get a playoff very quickly and only took 6 seconds off the board. So they were able to get another play in just before the game was called. I don't know if another play, maybe, you know, looking Keenan Allen's way. I'm not sure. I don't know what more we could do.
No.
Or what could have been done. And that's, you know, I like Anthony Lynn, but at the same time, this is falling on him.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think there is a point where the Chargers have to say, look, we've evaluated the right quarterback. We know we have the kid. This kid can make NFL throws. And again, he'll grow. He seems to be pretty smart with the position. And we know he's going to grow and get better. Yeah, right?
He needs to learn to slide when he's running.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, that
definitely comes as it goes. But at the same time, now you've got to evaluate the coach. Are we putting this kid in the right hands? Are we putting this team in the right hands? Because as I said earlier, it's the same thing with the Dolphins. Look, you owe it to your team to win games, right? You cannot convince 52 other guys to just get a paycheck to let the team work its way through a quarterback, right? That's hard to do, right? Everyone's competitive. The only reason they got to this level is most of them were super competitive and worked really hard to get to being an NFL player. And because the careers are so short, guys don't want to waste their time with a lousy young quarterback. But if you get a good young quarterback and everybody on the team knows that kid can play and everybody knows that kid is showcasing some things early in his career that make him special, now you got to look at the coach and go, okay, what are you doing with this kid? What are we doing as a team? Because he's doing his job. That kid is doing his job. Are we doing ours as a team? Are we in position? Are we putting ourselves in position to win games? Why aren't we closing the deal? Why aren't we doing it? And that is Anthony Lynn all the way down to the coaching staff. Why are we blowing a huge lead against Denver? Why can't we? Why aren't we calling maybe a few different plays that would have allowed us to score from the 1 yard line with a couple of downs to do so? I mean, those are questions I would be asking if I was a Chargers organization. Maybe it is an Anthony Lynn problem. Because that game was, of course, winnable if you're at the 1 yard line and you have a number of downs to do it. But now they're 2-6. And again, as Mike McCarthy said, and Mike McCarthy said the same thing with Dallas, there are no moral victories here, right? Look, we train to win. We are paid to win. We did not win. Yes, we were shorthanded, but that's no excuse. The Chargers don't have an excuse here other than maybe the play calling's off or something's wrong with the team or something is missing or they're not closing out wins. I mean, this is a team that what? They went to overtime against Kansas City earlier this season, right? I mean, they have been in... Almost every one of their games has been close. Almost every one of them. I mean, even in their wins. Now, they have a 10-point win against Jacksonville, but they have a 3-point win against Cincinnati, but they have 2 overtime losses, one with a 7-point loss to Tampa Bay, a 5-point loss to Carolina, a 1-point loss to Denver, and now a 5-point loss to Las Vegas. I mean, these are one scores. These are one moments. They're not getting blown away and looking terrible. Right, unlike the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who last night got blown away, and if 2020 gives us any other dud of a game on the national level, I don't think it will come close to what I was anticipating last night and what I got as a result of it. All right, I will not. I don't think I will find another game. But that if you give me a scale and on one side is how much are you looking forward to these two teams playing to what the end result was, I will not find it.
No.
I will not find a game on the schedule. Because I mean, if I get a blowout, I will look and go, yeah, I probably expected that. What happened last night, I could not believe was occurring on my TV.
I mean, what was the tagline for the show? Quarterback showdown. Two Hall of Famers.
Yep.
Head to head.
Head to head.
Maybe the last time ever.
And here was
probably not. But.
So here was the Buccaneers storyline, right? They lost in the opening week to New Orleans, and Brady didn't play particularly well in that game. But then they started to get their act together, right? Remember they had that road loss in Chicago where Brady was really frustrated at the undisciplined nature of his team, but then they bounced back, beat Aaron Rodgers, went on the road, beat Las Vegas, beat the Giants on a Monday night. Then they go play the Saints again. So now we're getting the rematch at home. We are a better football team now. We're getting Antonio Brown, for crying out loud. And they got destroyed. Remember how earlier I was kidding about how, like, my Steeler fan friends were saying we should just start backups because Dallas is so terrible? And I said, this isn't Alabama Chattanooga. This is Alabama Chattanooga. This is a game that was over at halftime. two juggernaut teams in their division, and this game was over at halftime. It was 31 to nothing at halftime. It's unbelievable how much the Saints just trotted out and scored up and down the field, and how bad Brady looked, and how bad Antonio Brown looked. But I don't expect, I'm not blaming on Antonio Brown. He just got there, for crying out loud. But Tom Brady, that's the worst loss of his career in terms of points and stats and whatnot.
Forget about points and stats. He looked terrible.
He looked absolutely terrible.
He looked like a rookie. Some of those throws, that one interception that he threw where he just, he looked like he was going to go down again and then just floated that ball for like a mile up into the air. It's like, I don't even know if that's a rookie move.
Right.
That's a third string quarterback rookie move.
It was really hard to watch because, again, and as I said earlier, this was really a good game. I just got done sweating out the Steelers and I'm like, all right, I'm going to go have some dinner and now I'm going to watch Brady and Breeze. No, I watched Breeze, but I didn't watch the Buccaneers show up.
Yeah. Brady wasn't there.
Brady had never lost by more than 31 points, lost by 35. It's the most lopsided game of the season so far, 35 points. No touchdowns for Brady, multiple interceptions. I think he's done it maybe once or twice in his entire career. I get it. I know he was playing for the Patriots and they were built in different ways and whatnot, but still, God, that was terrible. Such a letdown too. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We're going to continue more on the NFL. Hour two, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb. We'll switch over to college. Matt Michelle joining us from the Orlando Sentinel. We'll get a wrap-up of a good weekend of college football. As I said last week, you're going to start seeing movement now. It's November. We're getting closer to when the committee is going to start telling us exactly what they think of these teams, even though we don't have a lot of interconference games and whatnot, and we've got games being postponed all over the place. We still are going to start seeing people making some statements about where football teams are. Matt Michelle will join us in hour two for that. But coming up, we are going to talk about what we did lose on Sunday, as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And this hour of Wake Up Call, presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. Hey, The Athletic delivers every sports story that matters. They have a full-time local writer dedicated to your team, providing breaking news, in-depth analysis, and exclusive stories you can't find anywhere else. Plus, they've got the national names you know, David Aldridge, Stuart Mandel, Ken Rosenthal, Lindsey Jones, providing unrivaled league-level perspective and insights, all personalized ad-free. I check The Athletic 4 or 5 times a day. It's fantastic. Whether you're looking for a fantasy football edge or a long-term outlook on your NBA team, The Athletic is the sports coverage you need. Subscribe today for $1 a week at theathletic.com/radioweek. Once again, that's theathletic.com/radioweek. So Sunday, I went to church with my family. As I was leaving, I got a notification on my phone that Alex Trebek had passed away at the age of 80. We knew this day was coming. Pancreatic cancer is no joke. He didn't, wasn't going to recover from it. It was just a matter of time. But man, it still hit me pretty hard.
Yeah.
It was really hard to take.
It's weird because Sean Connery passed away. We're like, he was old.
Yeah.
Alex
Trebek was 80.
I know. But we're not holding it in the same light.
Nope, we're not. We're not. And again, we knew it was coming. He wasn't going to beat it. We knew he wasn't going to beat it. He didn't think he was going to beat it. It was just a matter of time of when it was going to happen. But man, it hurt because I think the thing about Jeopardy, because of its length, I think what's cool about his job at Jeopardy was, look, I grew up loving game shows. I loved game shows from when I was a little kid. And I've always joked that if I wasn't doing this for a living, I'd love to be a game show host. I just think they're fun. And I'm just such an important part of my life. Because when I was younger and I didn't have cable, that was the only thing that was on. Like if you're homesick, right? Or we had a snow day or whatever. It was the only thing on until soap operas kicked in. So things like Card Sharks, Deal or No Deal,
Price is Right.
I mean, name them. I mean, there was Scrabble with Chuck Woolery. It was Joker's Wild, Tic-Tac-Doe. I mean, the list goes on. But there was Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune for a long, long time. But Alex Trebek, and this is no knock on Sajak or Wink Martindale or any of the other ones that were game show hosts. Alex Trebek, he had the hardest game show of them all. He had to read those clues that were for very intelligent people. And he had to say it in a way. And I know they did take different takes, and I get it. But he had to say it so that it was a fair way of the contestants getting the information to process what the answer was. Right? So he couldn't screw up. He couldn't screw up in how he read those clues. He had to pronounce all the words correctly because it was needed information for the game to be on the up and up. And he was, by all accounts of any, and my brother-in-law was on the show Jeopardy. He is, and I had a RA that was also on Teen Jeopardy. So I know two people that were on the show. By all accounts, he was one of the nicest guys that they've ever met. They said he was genuinely nice, took the pictures, signed the autographs, genuinely liked and had a conversation with you where he wanted to know more about you. He did that for everybody, I heard. Everybody. And that's a lot of people that have gone through him. And there's a lot of people in one day of taping. And it's just, I don't know, sad because I used to, I mean, I watched Jeopardy a lot. Then I stopped and kind of not watched it. But I watched enough to realize how hard that job was. And Alex Trebek was a staple in households across the country. I mean, think about how cool, go to any room where Jeopardy is on. What do people do? They jump in and do the answers as quickly as possible. There's some level of pride when you know the answer to a Jeopardy question and nobody else in the room knows it. It's like, oh yeah, I got Pascal, and nobody else did. You feel a little pride, like you remember something from school. And there were some really fun moments. Like, do you remember the classic football where nobody got all the football questions right?
I'm going to, spoiler alert, that could be coming up in about 15 minutes.
Okay. that's one of the classics, right? When he was rapping, that's another one of the classics. So rest in peace, Alex Trebek, man. There's nobody like you. I don't think anybody will. Whoever takes over the Jeopardy job, if they do, is going to have a large role to fill. I'm sure they'll do it well down the road, but not as good as Alex Trebek did. We continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.